Hey guys, welcome back to another weekly podcast of Artificial Talk. I'll be your host, Patrick, and today I'm joined with Tristan.
Hello!
And today we have a few interesting topics lined up. Firstly, I think we wanted to talk about the wallpaper that's been bricking Samsung phones.
Yes.
If you haven't heard about it, a specific photo has been floating around on the internet of a serene landscape. I can't really describe it better than that. It's a very beautiful photo, but it is notorious for crashing phones if you set it as the lock screen or home screen, I believe. Either or, I think, will crash it, but more commonly people are reporting that the lock screen is causing it to crash. It's kind of interesting, actually, the reason behind it. It's comes down to converting what kind of photo it is and what RGB it uses. So, like, the photo's taken in, like, not sRGB, it's taken in another format. I don't remember what it is, but, and there's one single pixel, where when Google tries to convert it, it gets a value above 255, which is the maximum, which causes the program to throw an error. And when Android gets errors, it tries to shut down the application so it doesn't harm the system. But the issue here is it's the lock screen, so you can't really shut that down, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, as a disclaimer, while we will be linking our source below, Wit that does have a copy of the photo. If you do have a Android phone, please do not put this as your home screen or lock screen or send this to somebody and tell them to do that. Like, that's, first of all, you're going to brick their phone and that's going to be a pain in the butt. And just be a decent person and don't send it.
Yeah. But I mean, with that said too, the most curious part about this is that it really only affects Samsung phones from what people are reporting. Some people with Pixels have set it as their lock screen and home screen. It's, they still have a phone. So,
right,
it kind of brings up the question, like, how standardized is Android anymore, you know?
It is kind of interesting that, there wasn't really something in place to stop something like this from happening. Actually, I'm kind of surprised it didn't happen before, but it might have just been one of those things that this photo happened to have, like, the perfect, like, set of pixels lined up, the perfect color space calibrated, like, all these maybe very specific things happened that got it to this point. But it is kind of interesting that, as you said, it's mostly happening to Samsung phones. It might just be maybe the way that Samsung's version of Android handles it, One UI.
Yeah. It's possible, because I remember the exact reason why this occurs is because the Google's formula for determining what the equivalent pixel is for, like, what shade it should be, it rounds everything up. So that's how it's possible, because otherwise it's impossible to get above 255. But since they round up, you can get something higher. And it, and it's weird
that's
because, yeah, but it begs the question, like, did that get patched out for pixels, or are they better at handling an error like that? Or, you know, I don't know.
It is kind of interesting, especially the fact that, so Android 11 devices are not affected as far as testing goes, and Huawei devices are also not affected at all. So it seems maybe Android devices that are very, that kind of, if you want to call it, they go away from stock Android, aren't as affected. So maybe it's the closer you are to stock, the more chance it has of affecting your device. But again, don't install this wallpaper on your device, because once it's on there, it's very difficult to actually change, because your phone will just continually crash with this wallpaper on it.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you want to test this for yourself, just be prepared to sacrifice literally all of your data on your phone. Like,
or back
all
it
of it. So,
yeah.
I mean, I could test it. I have a Samsung 7, S7 that I don't use anymore. I have a Note 9 now, but it is a Samsung, so it's possible I could try it. But I'm going to guess that most people don't have a spare Samsung laying around. In which case,
yeah,
like, there's no reason and there's no way for you to safely test something like this without sacrificing your data. So please be safe about that.
So it is, I was going to say, it is kind of interesting. This is not affecting iPhones at the moment. So if you have an iPhone, you could install this wallpaper. It is a very nice looking wallpaper, to be very clear. It's just Android doesn't like to play nice with it as of right now. So although it has been reported that Google and Samsung are working on it. So hopefully within this month, honestly speaking, we get some sort of fix rolled out, or maybe in the next month's updates or whatever. But just something so that, you know, if somebody really likes this wallpaper, they can actually use it.
Yeah, and I think like part of the reason, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there for some reason. I think I was gonna say something about like the reason why. I was gonna say that for some reason, you can take a screenshot of it and then set it as your wallpaper, and it'll be fine. I've heard that is a thing as well. And I don't know why that occurs. If the issue is converting it, could it be that the lock screen application on Samsung phones, like, since it is like an application, like, could it be that that's outdated compared to other OSs? And like the screenshot app, maybe?
That's actually really interesting. So like, if you screenshot it, it's perfectly fine. But if you use the original image, it causes a bricking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can also just convert it using an online converter, convert it to sRGB on your computer, and then put it on your phone, and it should work because the issue comes from converting it, right? And like determining
I see what you're saying.
And determining like the exact hue that the LED on your phone needs to display, right?
So. Wow. Okay. So that actually. Wow. So I guess images with certain characteristics of this one could potentially cause the same issues then. Because.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's because, like, you know how sRGB has values from 0 to 255 for R, G, and B, right? Or.
Right.
Some variation. This one goes further out and has a wider range of color, essentially. So you can have many different shades of green, like more than sRGB can, right?
Right.
And so Google has something that converts it. So it should be fine for other photos. It's just that in one weird case, and I'm sure there are multiple other ones that would fall into this weird case, certain shades, since they're rounded up from whatever they get, because they get really long, nasty decimals, so it's just they round them up. And so it just doesn't work. But computers and stuff can handle that. They can, instead of rounding all the numbers up, they'll round them down and it'll work fine, right? So I think if they patch the bug, you can just use any, you can use the photos. I forget what specific RGB format they use, but in that particular one, it's like basically the widest scope of colors, right? So I'm assuming once they patch it, it should be fine, right?
I was gonna say, even on Android 11, it seems like maybe this was just a oversight in the previous version of Android, because Android 11 doesn't have any issues with the image at all. Like, the original image converting directly on the device doesn't seem to have any issue. It just seems older versions of Android plus occasionally a skinned UI seems to cause issues.
Interesting. So,
Maybe it was just something in the code. I know that you do a lot more coding than I do, but there are quite a few ways to shortcut a lot of like longer code methods. I almost wonder if this was sort of a shortcut or something along those lines.
Yeah, maybe. It sounds like it to me, because like it's kind of hard. It takes a lot more time to determine whether you should round up or down. And I'm assuming they're coding in like a really like base level language. So it's going to take a lot more lines of code, and it's going to make it a little bit less efficient if you have to determine whether you need to round up or round down for decimals. So I'm assuming they just said, hey, you get a decimal, just round it up. Instead of saying, if it's a 5 or greater, you got to round up, and if it's less, then you round down, right?
Right. And keep in mind, too, on Android, this is like OS level stuff. Like, this is the basis of every other phone that has to, you know, whether skinned or not, this is the basis for all those other functions to work on top of. So I imagine when they were making it, there was probably a lot of considerations for maybe other things, and this kind of was like, get it done, just make it work sort of thing, rather than make sure it doesn't go above that, you know, the actual limit that our phone can do. Or actually, not even the phone, the OS can do, I should say.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's because it's like a very weird case of numbers, you know? It's just like, just one of them wasn't supposed to be rounded up or something, and it's just kind of blew everything, screwed everything up. But it works in every other case, right? So I think it was just coming down to like, didn't test really specific cases, which is just going to happen when you develop stuff, you know?
Right. And I mean, we even determined with screenshotting, it was perfectly fine, but once the original image was kind of put into place, I was like, okay, that doesn't work, but the screenshot does. It's just kind of one of those weird edge case type things.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I think the situation boils down to, is just a weird edge case. In other news, SpaceX is still doing stuff. They launched their rocket last weekend.
Yes. One of my, I think that may have been Robert's favorite episode to be on, was the SpaceX launch.
Yeah.
So, I guess kind of just to update you all, so the Dragon crew, capsule, which is officially named the Endeavour by its astronauts that were aboard, did dock with the International Space Station earlier this week. I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, I want to say. So that's really cool. But I kind of want to talk about something else this week related to SpaceX. And I kind of brought it up with Robert a little bit, but we didn't really touch a huge amount on it. We kind of just were having fun with all the specs and talking about SpaceX rockets and history and all that. But another topic I kind of wanted to bring forward is, so we're now at the point where a private company has launched a rocket for NASA, right? So that's awesome. So I guess I wanted to talk about is sort of the, let's call it the commercialization of space now. Now that a whole new avenue is open for all these different companies and all these different individuals. Like, there actually might be an industry of space now. So I just kind of want to throw that in the air for discussion and have a little fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, Elon has done this, or he is trying to do this currently, right, with the whole Starlink thing. Like, it's not exactly what you're talking about, because you're talking more like space travel stuff. But he is kind of commercializing the fact that he can throw rockets into space, because he's sending thousands and thousands of satellites into space, right? And that's the end goal.
I was going to say, I actually completely forgot about Starlink until you just mentioned it. But also earlier this week, he also launched... He launched a bunch of Starlink satellites. That was the thing that happened too.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking about that. but yeah, I don't know actually about how he's going to commercialize space stuff, because I think most people would never get on a rocket ship, and I don't think a lot of people would pass like the certification and training and stuff that you need to get on a spaceship, right? Like,
so yeah. That's one of those things as of right now, because it's kind of a new, let's call it a new line that they have to sort of cross. Like, even with airplanes, when airplanes first came out, it was sort of the idea that, you know, you had to be trained to be a porter plane, and there were a lot of like restrictions on being on a plane and all. Then it became commercialized and they started letting more and more people on it. And eventually now we're to the point we are at where passenger planes are the normal, like, you know, the idea of a plane traveling across the ocean with nobody on it except for the pilot and the engineer, all that, that's cargo, basically.
Yeah,
like, planes are some of the safest things on the planet at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's just a question of, at this point, what would be the point of going to space? Because, like, you know, you got on an airplane, you're generally going to travel somewhere. That's the idea anyways. I guess if you were to go to space right now, where would you go in space?
Like, that is true. There's not really too many places you could even go. You could go to the ISS, but that's not a very big place.
And it's more of like a sciencey thing almost. Like,
yeah.
Research and you know, doing tests and all that sort of thing. It's not really, well, how would you say, like, touristy, I guess?
Yeah, no. There's no, like, general public, like, reason to go right now, right? It's all science stuff. Like, you're going to space to do experiments or, like, something along those lines, right?
So, now here's one scenario I could see. Have you ever seen those images, you know, if you just Google Earth, like, you know, from space, where, you know, astronauts have taken pictures and they, like, post them up to their social media or whatever, and people can take them and use them as wallpapers and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
If you had the chance, maybe not to go to the ISS, but you could go on a rocket that just orbits the planet maybe, like, for a few hours so that you could, like, kind of watch as the Earth passes you by, like, would you do that right now?
Right now?
Yeah. Like, if they said, we're taking 8 people to space, we're going to launch you up, and you just orbit around the Earth for, like, a day. Take pictures, you could float around, do all those sorts of things.
Yeah, it'd be sick, but, I mean, cost and if I could handle the forces would be the two main things that I would be worried about. Because, like, again, cost, like, it's not cheap to fly a spaceship, right? Like,
all right.
It's not something that I think I would have the money to do ever. But if I did have that money, then the next big barrier would be, can I even handle the forces of going into space? Because if I remember, there's a lot of, like, training that you have to do to, like, be okay with being in space, but I'm not sure. Is that for long periods of time or just for the launch?
I believe so you're talking specifically about the forces of gravity that, like, push you back in the chair when it launches and all that, right?
Yeah, that sort of stuff, the G-forces. Mm-hmm.
So I believe, and not a rocket scientist, literally and metaphorically, but I think the hardest part of the launch is getting past those G's in the initial launch. Usually, I want to say when I was watching the SpaceX launch the other day, there was one point where they referred to it as the hardest part of the launch, and I guess they were exposed to, like, three times Earth's gravity in terms of the force they were experiencing. And that's the hardest part of the whole launch, is my understanding.
Oh, okay.
And then, yeah, once you break atmosphere, my understanding is it's a lot less force. Like, you kind of just float around and, you know, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we didn't mention it last week. There was a dinosaur on the Dragon
Crew
pod. And that was just, that is literally there to tell the crew when there's going to be gravity. Like, I guess, or no gravity. So it's going to be 0 Gs. Huh. I guess that's been a really long running tradition.
Yeah.
Like,
Or
go ahead. Yeah.
I think they're selling that, like, a replica of it on the SpaceX site or something. Because I remember Robert sent me a link because I was watching it and I, like, messaged him, like, was that a dinosaur? And he was like, yeah. And, like, a few days later, he's like, yeah, you can buy one, I guess.
It's actually really cool. He says it's one of those little weird traditions. Like, I guess the two astronauts that went up, they had their kids bring their favorite toys forward, and they chose their favorite to actually bring up to space to be the 0G tester. So, just a really cool little fun thing.
Yeah.
But I am interested to see in the next 5 to 10 years, though, like, what they do with space. Because now this is, like, a whole new front to explore, right? Like, the idea of building, like, a moon base now, or maybe establishing some sort of, like, tourist station where people would just be there. Maybe it's, like, a hotel type thing where you stay there for a couple of days and then, you know, they send you back and all that sort of, like, that seems really cool to me. Very expensive, but very cool.
Yeah, and I definitely think, like, that will happen at some point. I mean, it has to. But I don't know how much of the, like, how much NASA's going to put into that, you know? Like, because right now it doesn't seem like they're trying to do a whole lot in space. It seems like they're mainly just trying to get back into space, right? They're trying to have rockets launch on American soil for the most part and that sort of thing. And not so focused on, like, tourism.
Well, I was going to say, do you think that's going to be a like a NASA type thing, or do you think that's something that private companies are going to take up? Like SpaceX, for example, or Blue Origin. As I said it wrong last week, it is Blue Origin. That's Jeff Bezos' space company, not Blue Rocket.
Yeah, I think like NASA would have to be like the guidelines for that, you know, but a private business would definitely be the people who would put it into action, I guess, right? It's kind of like, I'm assuming when airplanes first started doing consumer like flights, I'm pretty positive the people who were like headlining like people flying in planes, right? Like for non-commercial purposes, I'm sure they like made guidelines and stuff for like how to make it safe, and they had a private business do that. I don't think that they would personally do that, right?
Right. Like in airlines, it's the like FAA here in the United States that says these are the basic guidelines for how a plane has to basically fly.
Yeah, and I think NASA would take on the role of FAA. Sorry, that's the FAA, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And jumping back a few topics, do you know if the Starlinks were painted black? Because I remember there's a lot of controversy about the first ones being launched.
I'm actually not too... Like, okay, actually, I'm not too familiar. What controversies did the Starlinks have?
Oh,
that's the original satellites.
Since they weren't painted black, they reflected, mm-hmm. which meant photography of space, looking at space through a telescope, a lot of that stuff was thrown off, right? You could tell that they were the satellites, but it created a lot of light pollution in the actual space environment, right?
Really? And,
yeah. So, like, I think, like, it got to the point where someone made an algorithm to remove them from photos and stuff like that. But I think, like, it's becoming less and less of a problem because Elon says that they're going to just go further and further away from Earth, right? And as it goes further away, the less pollution will be like reflected back at us, I guess. But it kind of seems like that's, I don't know if I would trust that 100%, right? I feel like firstly you would want to have it be okay, right?
That, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, maybe, and again, maybe that's one of those weird little oversights I didn't even think of, like, oh, we're sending a satellite to space, but then it's like, oh, for people that are actually looking up into space, it might reflect light.
Yeah, and it's like, I think there was a lot of backlash from it from, like, for astronomers and photographers, right? And right. I think Elon said that he would paint them black, but he didn't do it right or something. There was a second wave of smaller controversy, but at least it showed that he was in good faith and he was trying. So I'm curious if we're going to see another wave of backlash.
Yeah, so I just found what you were talking about. SpaceX said they were going to add special sun shades to future satellites, and it would reduce the satellite's reflectivity. So the last launch they did, which actually happened fairly recently, about 3 days ago, actually the most recent launch of Starlink satellites, or Starlink, Starlink satellites, has that built-in sunshade.
So
I guess we're gonna see if that works. This will be the first one that's actually gonna be testing it, though, so who knows. I actually didn't even know that. I didn't even think of that being an issue, but I could totally understand why that would be an issue.
Yeah,
like, especially if he gets all 12,000 satellites that he plans to get up there, all of a sudden you have like 12,000 little lights that are constantly going around the planet at, you know, orbital speeds.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to see anything. Or it's going to just look like a lattice at that point. Yeah.
So, okay. So that's going to be... the first 60 or first 59 or whatever have that issue with the reflectivity. But every satellite after that should have the new sun shade visor, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the very least, like, I don't like that he almost messed up like really badly, but at least he caught himself and he's trying to do something about it, right? Like,
yeah,
at the very least he's doing something. Whether it works or not is another story,
right? And I mean, again, this is like the first test of many, so like maybe this will have its own slew of issues, because maybe it's, you know, too dark and it absorbs too much light or something, and then something else goes wrong. But it's kind of cool. I mean, the whole point of Starlink, regardless of the satellites being reflective or not, is to provide internet around the globe, especially to people who are in more rural areas that might not have, like, you know, conventional access to internet. So, for as much as I guess the reflectivity could cause issues, at the same time, like, the idea of Starlink is honestly, like, it's really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, so we have currently like 60 of those satellites up. He did say that he needs at least 400 to start giving that like minimal coverage.
Oh, huh.
So that's going to be kind of interesting now.
Yeah, and it'll be a while before we see if that, because that's how he's going to be funding SpaceX, right? That's like his end goal, is to provide internet, and then in return, that money goes into SpaceX or something along those lines.
I think that's the thought process. So yeah. Maybe this is their idea to allow SpaceX to commercialize. Actually, this is technically commercializing space. Like, the first step, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like commercializing it like airplanes yet, but it is a first step.
Right. I will say, too, also, I made an error there. They actually have 500 satellites now. They launched another 60, and now they have 500. So, that's a correction there.
Okay.
They actually have a lot of satellites.
Wow.
Right. So, what we're learning here is Elon Musk is going to be the first entrepreneur of space. Which is a weird thing. But kind of cool.
Yeah. And speaking of internet, do you want to talk about the whole state-controlled media thing that Facebook is doing?
Yes. So, I'll kind of put some background context for people. If you remember the 2016 elections, and this is going to get kind of controversial, but I'm going to try to stay away from that as much as possible. Specifically with Facebook at the time, there were a lot of, well, actually, I shouldn't even say there were a lot of like thoughts. It was very much known that Facebook had some ads that were specifically sent by news companies that were state controlled for specific candidates at the time for the presidential elections of 2016. So the issue was, because a lot of these news companies weren't actually registered as states, like they might have been known to be state controlled, but some of them weren't. Some of them were straight up just news companies. They didn't have any affiliations outside of what people knew about them on Facebook, and they would often post ads for specific candidates. And this was a big issue in 2016. There's been a lot of controversy around the elections of 2016 due to the fact how Facebook handled ads at the time, especially political ads. So, especially with the 2020 election coming up relatively soon, Facebook and Twitter, for the matter, and all pretty much any social media platform has started rolling out features to make sure that people are more informed about the advertisement they're seeing. So this one in particular is kind of an interesting one. So Facebook is now going to start labeling news companies that are state-controlled as state-controlled media, meaning if they post an ad or even if they post like a normal post, Facebook is basically going to put a little like asterisk that says this is a state-controlled media. So just be aware that this news company is under the directive of another country. And I'll just kind of start with my personal opinion. I think that this is honestly a really good step to informing people to make sure that they know where information is coming from. So,
yeah, I mean, like, I don't really see a downside to this, really. Like, I think it's good to get information out to people, especially when it's something around, like, politics. Like, it's really important to know where your information comes from sometimes, because sometimes they can just be completely unfounded or that sort of thing. And so, like, if you were to see an ad campaigning for one of the, presidential candidates, and you thought it was, like, from them, but it was really from, like, another news source, like a, state-controlled media thing, then I feel like you'd kind of feel, like, betrayed in a way, right? Like, you thought it was from them, but it really wasn't. It was from another, like, an unrelated third party in part, I guess, right?
Right. And I mean, especially if there is political interest in having a certain candidate put into office, especially in the president's position, it is very much one of those things that you probably don't want outside info. Maybe you'll allow outside influence, but you'll also inform people like, hey, this is from you know, another government in a sense. Like, in particular, like, for example, People's Daily, which is a Chinese news media, they, as many of you may know, China does control their media companies. They have a very tight grip around their media companies. Like, everything is approved and printed by the Chinese government. That's something that's pretty well known. If they decided, you know, to post on Facebook, like, hey, you know, support this political candidate for president, under that, Facebook would basically post, hey, this is from the People's Daily. That is a state-controlled media of China. So, yeah. And I mean, I especially after 2016, I could definitely see where Facebook's coming from, though. They don't want that influence there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Because it was bad, like, with the amount of stuff that was floating around on Facebook in 2016 when that happened. Like, no one really knew what was, like, a thing from, like, you know, a regular old person or, like, a something that wasn't state-controlled versus something that was. And I think some of it was, you know, like, fake news and all that stuff, right?
Right. So, I mean, we definitely had a huge amount of that going around in 2016.
Yeah, so maybe this will cut down on it a little bit. Not a lot, because I'm pretty positive they're not going to say, like, it's state-run, like, media, right? If for fake news. At least I'd hope. That it's not just, like, country spewing stuff, right?
I honestly speaking, especially for this election, I am hoping that maybe, like, Facebook's whole thing in 2016 was to be very hands-off. Like, I almost hope that they're more hands-on, even if they have to be a little more heavy-handed with it, just because, as you said, like, 2016 was a mess. Like, it was just...
It was bad, yeah.
If you went onto Facebook in 2016 during the presidential election, it was a dumpster fire. Like, everywhere you went, there was an ad from here, there's an ad from here. A lot of it was just straight misinformation. Some of it wasn't, some of it was, like, it was just a mess. And you couldn't sort the bad from the good. So, and I'm hoping that maybe there's more to that. Maybe this is just, like, the first step is maybe, I think, what they're going for.
Yeah. I mean, and related news to how Facebook is doing something, did you see that Twitter is now putting, like, fact-check stuff underneath certain tweets? Like, yes. When I was on Twitter earlier today, someone showed that if you put coronavirus or corona and 5G in the same tweet, it has a little pop-up that says, get the information about 5G and coronavirus. Like, it's weird to me that they would implement that, honestly. Like, it's good to get information out, but, like, it's a little, I don't know, like, do you think it's going to even be effective?
So, actually, before I answer that question, I do have one question for you in reference to that.
Okay.
Do you think Twitter has the right to actually, I guess, put a fact check to, like, that under someone's tweet?
I mean, it's their platform. Twitter owns Twitter, right? So, they can technically do whatever they want with it. Like, even if it is as big as it is today, and they are kind of messing, like, with someone, what someone is tweeting, and almost, you know, like, putting something at the bottom of their post that links to something in the, something that disproves it, it is their website, and I think they have a legal right to do that, right?
So, and the reason I bring that question to you is because, so if you look at the actual size of Twitter, and even Facebook for the matter, and Instagram, and all these social medias, the big three or four, whatever they are now, the actual size of these companies is in the millions, if not billions, of people that are on them, right? And not only that, some people from the public who also, you know, view it through news, like CNN and BBC, when they pull tweets from Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, with that sort of scale in mind, do you think Twitter sort of has the right to police, even though the scale of their platform reaches, it pretty much reaches everybody on the planet to some extent?
Yeah, I mean, like, legally they do have a right, but as you were saying, like, since it's so big, personally, I don't know if it's a good idea. I mean, I'm all for them fighting against misinformation, but it's like, it is someone's tweet. And you're kind of basically editing that tweet and putting a footnote there. And I don't know if that's something that you should really be doing, right? I mean, to be fair, like, none of these little things are popping up when they, like, take the tweet and they insert it in an article or anything like that. But it doesn't sit right with me because of the scale, right?
Right. And I mean, yeah, and to be clear, I agree with you. It is their platform, but I also, it's one of those things I'm not entirely sure about, especially when your platform is of that scale, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's like, yeah, they can legally do it, but they shouldn't, right?
Right. Like, and the whole idea, especially, like, you've seen how Facebook and Twitter tend to do things. A lot of times when countries tell them they have to, you know, police certain comments and all that, they outright refuse to do it. And their argument tends to be, we're the platform of free speech, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, but you could almost make the argument, if Twitter is policing certain tweets and information, that it is sort of hampering free speech in a way, because they're basically saying that this tweet may not be correct and that this person is wrong.
Yeah, that is true.
Which is, and you know, I'm not saying that to try to be controversial or even try to start an argument, but
oh, yeah, for
that
sure.
Is, I imagine this is probably the questions that Twitter has to ask itself every day. Is it right for us to even post these sorts of things?
Yeah, or like to allow the spread of misinformation on the site and stuff like that, right?
Also true, right.
So,
you want to prevent that.
Yeah, so it's kind of just comes down to lesser of two evils at this point. Do you still want to be the, you know, people of free speech and let people say stuff that's not true? Or do you want to make sure people are getting the right information, especially considering how Twitter has, over the years, become a source of information for people? I mean, right. Like, you could probably get all of your news from Facebook and Twitter if you wanted to. And in that way, they kind of have an obligation to make sure you're getting actual facts, right?
So that's the interesting part. Now, Twitter, that's Twitter's stance on it. Twitter has decided we're going to do these posts. But if you actually look at Facebook, for example, Facebook's stance is that we are basically going to be hands-off. Like, we're not going to do fact-checking. We're not going to do anything like that. Like, the state media thing is actually one of the first things that they've done. And that's only in reference to ads. It doesn't actually, they're not going to do it for posts. So Facebook stance is that we're just going to let everyone post everything they want, of course, with their terms of service types of things, but they're basically not, they're hands off, if I'm going to put it like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten that vibe from what we've been talking about with how they're doing or how they're approaching this whole thing, right?
Right. Like they seem like, it's interesting because it's just two different approaches to the same platforms. Like Twitter and Facebook, for as much as people want to call them different, are social media companies. Like they do the same thing. They even make money the same way. So it's just the difference of approach in how they've chosen to kind of handle their platforms.
Yeah, I and think it's also sorry to cut you off there.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good.
I think it's also kind of interesting that Twitter is the one who's doing this and not Facebook, because I mean, I don't really post on social media. I think that's pretty clear if you like listen to how my views on it. But like, don't you spend a lot less time on making a post on Twitter than you do on a Facebook post? Since you're limited by characters, right? It's really easy to go from brain to Twitter, right? Just a thought to get out there. Versus like Facebook, where it's like, yeah, people really thinking about what they're posting. It's kind of weird that the one where people are just, you know, can rapid fire shout their opinions into the void is the one that's saying, like, fact check yourself, and not the one where people spend a lot of time on posts and write paragraphs and stuff.
So, if you actually look at Twitter and Facebook, I'm curious, if you had to choose one that you would get all your news from, though, who would you choose?
Well, I think, like, a lot of news companies have a Twitter account, right? And not as many have a Facebook. So, just by that statistic alone, Twitter seems like the obvious answer.
Yeah, I would say I'm probably in the same boat. Like, I actually do use Twitter to an extent for news. Like, not all my news. I tend to actually, like, try to do my own research on a lot of things. But if, you know, there's some news that just happened, I actually tend to get it from Twitter a lot of the time. Like, as you said, the sort of just fast chuck, like, hey, here's a link, and this is just what happened. You're like, oh, I got to click that link sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's better for that in terms of instead of Facebook, because it's 140 characters, right?
Right.
That's normally long enough for a headline and a link. So you just have headline and a link, and that's kind of like the most optimal way to post news. I don't think you need to, like, Facebook seems like it would be a little bit harder to do, right? Because you can't just post the title, right? You can't just post the title on Facebook, really. You gotta write something.
I feel like you get less engagement from users on Facebook. And I was thinking about it too. Most political leaders are on Facebook, or not Facebook, Twitter, to some extent. Like, the President of the United States, for example, is a very good example of someone who is on Twitter. And as well as that, I know there's several other world leaders who are also on Twitter. And that tends to be how they send news out and things. I've started to notice a lot more.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You don't really hear, you know, somebody posted X, Y, and Z on Facebook. You generally hear, oh, this is what this person posted on Twitter about the current crisis or whatever. Like, you tend to hear that from Twitter, not Facebook, which is, I mean, it's just one of those weird things, but.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in some way it might feel more honest because normally, at least, well, sometimes maybe in the case of our current president, they don't spend a lot of time on a tweet. They, like, proofread it sometimes and, like,
yes,
they post, right? But they're not spending, like, they're not sending it off to someone to, like, basically write it for them like they would, like, a speech, which I feel like would happen more with Facebook than Twitter because Facebook allows for a lot longer posts and stuff. And I don't think any of the world leaders know what a tweet longer is, so I don't think they're going to, like, you know, basically post a speech on Twitter. They're going to post, like, a thought, and this isn't true, but a thought feels more honest because it's not influenced by anything else, right?
True, yeah, very true. And I was also thinking, too, you know, when you look at the audience you tweet to, again, they're also limited by that 140 character limit. So instead of somebody writing out the 10-page article about, you know, about either their opinion on the news or how it's right or wrong, Twitter kind of limits that and says, well, you can put, like, a little, it's kind of singular thought, but you can't throw everything at once. Like, it makes it a lot easier to kind of just scroll through the comments and maybe get it at different perspectives on the news and all that.
Yeah, that is true. I never thought about it that way, you know?
So I guess with that sort of in mind, then, I guess it kind of makes sense that Twitter is taking that stance, especially since it is, at least for both, in our opinions, kind of that hub of news, though.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's just kind of one of those kind of just weird things, honestly speaking.
Yeah. Switch topics one more time before we take our break. Google and Amazon both have current lawsuits, right?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, more the Google one.
Fun stuff.
The Google one, I don't mean to laugh at the person who's doing it, but it seems a little excessive. If I remember correctly, it's $5 billion for Google not actually non-monitoring them if they use incognito mode. Like, the I think it's plaintiff, right? The person who's arguing this, they're yes. saying, like, Google's monitoring me in incognito mode, and that's not right. And so I'm suing them for $5 billion. But I think we mentioned it briefly before this, but Google never says they don't track you. They just say they don't keep your data in the browser.
So that seems to be kind of a... It's an old... I'll call it an old myth that incognito mode is a... perfectly secretive. So if you actually look at pretty much any of the main browsers today, they all have something known as incognito mode. Now, the purpose of incognito mode, and Patrick can kind of jump in and correct me if I say anything wrong, but its main purpose is to not save your history, not save your login information. Like, it is there as if you wanted to open up a brand new fresh browser with no association with your current account, is basically the point of it. However, if you open it in Chrome, for example, and you're signed in on Chrome, in your normal browser, not the private browser, but in the normal browser, keep in mind Chrome is still attached to Google. Like, that is a Google product.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, and when you open up... Go ahead. Yeah, no, I'll let you speak now.
I was just going to say, like, I don't know... like, I personally thought incognito mode was a bit more secretive than, like, normal browsing in terms of sending data to Google, and I'm sure it kind of is because it's not directly linked to your account, but it's like, I don't really know how you would come to the conclusion that it doesn't send data, right? Because it's Google.
So, right. Google, it's funny when you think about it. If you think you don't have any Google apps on your phone, for example... And you look at, let's take a, what's a good example of an app that probably has some Google stuff? Like Uber, for example. Uber's actually a pretty good example. If you've ever used Uber or Lyft for the matter, they actually do have Google tools installed on them and they use some Google services in order to actually function correctly and to gather some data on you to send to Google's ad services. That is a real thing that a lot of your apps do. That's how a lot of them make... you know, a little bit of extra money outside of what you, the services you pay for. Like, that's just, that's something that's built in. So, like, it's kind of interesting with this class action lawsuit, they're arguing that Google never said that incognito mode doesn't send tracking information. When, as we said before, Google's whole business is data collection, right? Like, that is basically their whole business.
Yeah, but I mean, to someone who's not really invested in tech stuff, right? I don't know if they would think that it was like 100% safe. I mean, even I, when I saw the headline, was like, wait, it sends data? And they went, oh yeah, of course it does. It's Google, you know? Like, there, I think, like, to the normal person, it wouldn't cross their mind that Google would send data because it's incognito mode, and they kind of imply that they're not going to do anything, right? They kind of imply that you're just logging in to a fresh browser that's not attached to you in any way, shape, or form, right? And, yeah.
So, go on. Yeah. So that's sort of the hard part I have with this. So, when you use incognito mode, technically speaking, as long as you never sign into your account, that data is not attached to you. But... and I'm going to make some assumptions here, but I assume a lot of the people who were using incognito mode, maybe in this class action lawsuit, either A, might have signed into their account on Google, or B, if they didn't, they went onto like a website that had Google AdSense attached to it, signed in with their account, maybe not their Google account, but another third-party account, and Google has ads everywhere. Like, it's kind of the idea, Google has spies everywhere, like, that is a real thing. Even if they can't see exactly where you're going, they can oftentimes kind of just pick you out and say, oh, cool, you signed into your account here. Even if I don't know what you searched for before, I know where you went after. Like, maybe that sort of thing is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that might be it. Because what actually could be the issue here is that they're logged into their account on Chrome. Because I think Chrome is like Firefox where you can make an account for it or log into the browser itself, right?
Yes, you sign with your Google account.
Like, and that's like linked to the browser, right?
Right. Yep.
So maybe it's that the data is still linked to them, even though they're under the impression that it will not be linked to them, right? So like when you go into incognito mode, you kind of think like even if they do collect data, it's not going to be directly linked to your account, right? It should be just collected as anonymous data. But that's not the case, maybe, and that's why they're doing a class action lawsuit.
So, I haven't read too deeply into the lawsuit itself, but I imagine what they're suing for is Google collecting data at all, is, I think, what their issue is. So, I'm kind of reading into it now. One of the things they said was specifically the most intimate and potentially embarrassing things they search for online. So my thought is maybe they're using the incognito mode to search for maybe some things they wouldn't want somebody else to see if they use the same computer.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think something that should be acknowledged, Google, if you use incognito mode on Chrome browser, first of all, that is just a Google product. So let's not even talk about how that might cause an issue. But let's say even like, let's use Firefox as a good example. It's a open source, its whole thing is privacy. So let's use Firefox as the example. If you use incognito mode on Firefox, but you use Google to actually search, well, Google, even if you're not assigned a user, does collect data. They usually throw it into aggregate data rather than individual data at that point, but they do collect data. And at a certain point, they could probably pinpoint who you are based on what you're searching for. So, and here's the thing. I'm not going to argue if this is right or wrong. This is just how Google's always done it. So, especially in that sort of case right there, you kind of put yourself in that position that Google is just going to collect that data. That is their business after all. Again, whether it's right or wrong, up to you to decide. But I struggle to say that this lawsuit is correct, considering the fact that, especially if they're using Chrome, they kind of consented to that data collection in Google's terms and services. So, you know, when I look at it that way, Google has trackers everywhere you go. Like, the internet is full of Google tracker, Facebook trackers, Amazon trackers, whatever you want to call them. And again, whether it's right or wrong, that's how Google makes money. That's how they do give you a lot of the services they do, and that's how they I try to make my life Google free, and I will tell you right now, it is impossible. Like, it is just in this day and age right now, you know, June 6, 2020, it is nearly impossible. But I mean, you know, I see the problem with it. People obviously don't want their data to be aggregated, especially if it's a little bit more embarrassing, but like, you should probably use Firefox and DuckDuckGo at that point and not Google Chrome and Google search.
Yeah. But I think that also begs the question, like, how many people do you know that even know what DuckDuckGo is? How many people?
Also the other problem.
Like, no one knows what DuckDuckGo is. And like, even worse is like DuckDuckGo is the only option outside of Google that people relatively know about that's like a secretive search option, even though there are others. I personally use startpage.com, and like, I don't know if you've ever even heard of that, Tristan. Like,
I've heard of that one.
Okay.
But again, we're kind of in that tech community.
Yeah, like, it's just kind of like, I don't think the general public would know about either of the services, really. And like, if they did want to go for them, they'd only hear about DuckDuckGo because DuckDuckGo has a decent amount of advertising when it comes to that, I feel. Like, it gets a lot of praise, right? And then there's also some actual advertising, so it's very widespread if you're looking for a secure search.
Like, DuckDuckGo, actually, like, if you actually, it's the only search engine that I'm aware of in that sort of privacy mindset that is supported across all platforms. Like, actually, even though Apple's default search engine is Google, DuckDuckGo is actually the next thing in line on Safari, for example. Firefox also has that as a native solution. Chrome even has that as a native solution. Like, there are other options for security. Whether or not they're known is an issue. I will say that much. But, you know, DuckDuckGo is by far the most marketed one.
Right. I think on that note, we're getting close to the end of the podcast, so I think we should take a break real quick. So, yeah, we'll be back in a few minutes. Hey, guys, welcome back. Thanks for sticking through our little break. I think we just want to keep talking about Google because we're hitting it off pretty good about like DuckDuckGo and how consumers don't really know about their options when it comes to privacy, right? So,
yes. So, I'm sorry for ranting right before the break happened about Google, but let's just talk about Google.
Yeah. And the fact, why not?
They have no respect for your privacy. Let's just start there.
Yeah.
I have a fun kind of side thing that I've been doing involving Google. So I've been looking at cloud storages quite recently. And as you must imagine, Google Drive is kind of at the top of that list, right? They're kind of one of the biggest, if not the biggest, cloud storage provider, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my thought process, the first thing, I actually ran into an issue with Google Drive. Google Drive does not support block syncing. If you don't know what that is, it's basically, instead of uploading an entire file when it changes, it only uploads the parts that have changed. And as far as I can tell, the only major one that supports it is Dropbox. Either way, beyond the point. My point being, Google scans all your files, and you should be aware if you're using Google Drive. So don't store bad stuff on there.
But yeah,
that's how I'm going to start this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see too much of a use for Google Drive anyways. I mean, the only really good thing about it is you can make another Google account and get more data for free, right? So in theory,
yes,
you can use it to upload stuff. And then if you run out of space, you just make another Google account and you log into that one, right? So in that way, I think it's kind of useful because you can kind of just upload stuff easily, right? But at the same time, it's like you're uploading that to Google, right? Do you really think they're not going to look at it?
So this is kind of an interesting thing. So Google's, then be clear, Google's not the only one that scans through your files. They're also just happen to be the ones that are most notorious for doing it. Let's put it like that. But, you know, Google scans through your files. The way they put it is to be able to pull up all your stuff in like just the search bar. Like if you have something typed into a document, you can find it by searching it in the search bar. That's what they say it's used for and all that sort of thing. Although, you know, as you can imagine, it kind of also serves Google a purpose by allowing them to kind of go through your stuff and figure out maybe what you like. And Google is notorious for doing that. Like, and to be clear, the class action lawsuit, I totally understand their grievances. Like, I understand the thoughts that they're having and probably, you know, the idea that they would rather not have their data gathered, right? That's kind of the whole idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you're also using Google. And that's the point where I'm kind of like, you're walking into that, you're walking into a trap, basically, once you start using Google stuff in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but I think that's my point. What I was talking about earlier is they didn't really know any better. I don't know if a lot of people look into how Google takes your data or how, like, weird Google is about that stuff, right? I don't think a lot of people really understand how bad it is sometimes. Heck, even I don't understand how bad it is sometimes because I haven't looked into this, like, super duper deep. So I don't even know how much data they take from, like, a Google search, right? I'm sure it's a decent amount, but I don't know, like, do they store IP address? Do they store what account it's linked to? Do they, you know, all that stuff, like, I don't know how a lot of people who are in the general public would know about that, right? And it's just kind of like, maybe this class action lawsuit, even if it does fail, it'll bring to light that Google isn't great, maybe, and it'll maybe have some people look at how much data Google steals who wouldn't have considered it otherwise, right?
Yeah, it's one of those really weird it's one of those really weird things to me. Because, so Facebook, back in, I think it was 2016, had the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal, right? Or was that 2018?
I think it was 2018.
Yeah, 2018. Obviously, I have my dates down to a T, but Facebook had the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal, which, you know, opened a lot of people's eyes to the amount of data that Facebook actually collects. And ever since then, every other month, Facebook basically has a data breach. So, like, you know, don't be surprised if for some reason Facebook says you need to change your password or something. Like, that's become a normal thing. Part of the reason I look at this lawsuit as sort of a nothing lawsuit in a sense, not to say that the people don't have legitimate grievances. I think there are legitimate grievances. I just think the way that the lawsuit is approaching it is going to fail. But the reason Facebook had issues was because this was a pretty massive scandal. Like, I don't even remember, it was in the millions of data that was actually leaked from Facebook. Like, it was account information, passwords, data. Like, it was just a huge aggregate of data. The thing about Google is, I think if you asked people if they trust Google, I would reckon that most people would probably say, yes, I trust Google, right?
Right, like, and we mean this, when we say to, like, trust, we mean, like,
they're going to take care of you.
Yeah, they're going to not steal your data, maybe. They're going to take some of it, obviously, but they're not going to steal that much of it. And they're going to give you, like, accurate results that aren't biased towards you in any way, shape, or form, right?
I was going to say, I think a lot of people like it when they go to Google and the advertisement that shows up, it's like, oh, look, it's kind of creepy, but also Google knows me, like what I want to see, right? Like it's more, or YouTube, for example. Yeah. When you see the ad pop up for that new game that you've been kind of looking at recently.
Like, yeah, that's true.
I think a lot of people like that, and they maybe it's sort of just not understanding how that ad kind of appears only to you because it's your interest, in a sense.
Right. And I think also what people don't really realize is, isn't Google in some way biased towards you or something like that? I remember there's a bit of a thing going around about that, and I can't remember if it was ever proven or disproven that like Google will take your data and then they'll find a search result that you'll like the most and they'll give it back to you, and so that way you keep using it. But I don't remember if that was disproven or not. I think it might have been.
I feel like I read about that, and I don't think it was ever proven or disproven. I don't think Google does search it, at least on their search engine, doesn't do that.
Right.
Like Google News, for example, I could tell you with almost 100% certainty that it will recommend you news that you prefer. Like, from certain companies or certain topics. Like, Google News, for example, is amazing at doing that. Like, and truth be told, I will even admit, I'm a bit guilty of letting Google News just kind of deliver me the stuff I want to read rather than maybe everything I should be reading. But,
right.
Like, Google Search, I don't think does that. And honestly speaking, I don't know for that for a fact, but I don't feel like it does when I look stuff up.
Yeah, same. That's kind of why I like. But I think something that's kind of important to get at here, though, is the fact that this seems plausible is insane. The fact that we had to think about this kind of hard and be like, would they actually do that? Is very telling of the kind of company that Google's become, I feel. Like, I don't know how a company that feels like it's in the range of plausibility for a company to be pandering, like, results from a database to you. I don't really know, like, how that would reflect well on them at all, you know?
So, I'm actually, do you remember back in, I forget what year they put it in, but do you remember Google used to have that motto of,
do no evil, right?
Do no evil, yes.
That yes.
One. And they removed it as of 2018. That motto no longer exists in their employee handbook.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those really tough things. Like, here's the thing. I'm not going to blame people for not being knowledgeable about Google's, let's call it privacy invasion in a sense, because I think a lot of the time, here's the thing, Google often doesn't put that in front of you either. Like, the tools are pretty easy to get at once you get into your profile, but, you know, you look up google.com, that's not the first thing that pops up. It's actually something you have to dig into the settings to find. All the privacy settings and all the data collection settings, all those sorts of things, they're kind of buried behind a menu.
Right.
Like, and you know, similar to the way Facebook does it, obviously, they do it the same way. So, you know, there are a lot of tools out there to help protect your privacy. And one of the, actually, here's kind of the first thing you should do. If you really don't want Google to have your stuff, stop using Chrome.
Yeah.
And I'll be clear. I like Chrome. Chrome is a great browser. In fact, it is objectively probably the most powerful browser you can currently get, in at least in compatibility with everything else. But it's also Google's product. And for all intents and purposes, Google does have, at least by their terms and services, every right to gather as much data as they want from that browser because it is their product.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Use Edge. Microsoft, it's new Edge. Chromium Edge.
Yes, Chromium Edge. Or just straight up Chromium. If you want Chrome experience, but you don't want to give your data to Google, Chromium, I believe, is pretty far detached from Google, right?
It's like, all open source.
Yeah, so you'll probably hear some like tech coding nerds complain about stuff if anything were to go like awry, and then you know to jump ship, right? I don't think that people who are into open source stuff would ever allow something like data collection to happen. So,
Yeah. Or use Firefox.
Yeah, Firefox as well.
Their whole company basis is around privacy, if you wanted to go that route.
That's true too. I personally use Firefox, and it's a pretty good browser. I wouldn't say it's like the best, because there are other browsers that work better, but Firefox is very easy to set up in comparison to Chromium in some cases. So
right.
Yeah.
And they kind of put all the privacy toggles right in front of you. It's actually the first thing when you open up Firefox, that's the first thing it shows you, is the little like, oh, do you want strict privacy or do you want basic privacy? Or maybe you want to cut everything off at the risk of breaking websites. Like, they're pretty straightforward with that.
Yeah, they're really good about it, you know?
And then, you know, if you, again, DuckDuckGo is a great search browser. It's pretty good for not being a data collection search engine. Or, honestly speaking, go to Bing. Like, I know Bing doesn't exactly have the best name attached to it, but it is Microsoft. And while Microsoft does do some data collection, it's not nearly as much as Google. I can tell you straight off the bat.
Yeah. And I mean, also, if you're really, really that concerned about privacy, starpage.com doesn't even save your searches. Like, you reload the page or you try to go back to a previous search and it doesn't exist. Like, the only history page isn't, like, when you go back for Google searches, it's saved in your history what you searched. Startpage literally just saves startpage.com in your history, even when you search in it, right? It's kind of insane how...
That's actually really cool.
And then they have options to open things up in a privacy, like, related tab or something like that. And, like, it's kind of crazy how, like, privacy-oriented that is. It's just, like, it's not as good as DuckDuckGo or, say, Google, right? In terms of getting really good results, it's a little bit lackluster there. And that's like the one thing that keeps me from using it daily and like on my computer and not like I use it on my phone, but I don't really use it on my computer. I tend to use DuckDuckGo or just Google for that. I'm a little bit more lax about like data collection. Like I'm fine with it at this point because of how much data there probably is about me on Google server at this point, right? So I'm a little bit lax about it. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about it, right?
Right. I mean, something you can even do right now if you wanted to, go to your Google account. Like, click the little image in the top right corner when you go to google.com. Click Manage My Google Account, and it brings you to that menu that has all those things. Just kind of click through them. Even if you don't know what everything does, they try to make the wording a little easier to understand. So you can go through yourself. Like, one of the things I do on my Google account is I do limit Google and say, okay, you can data collect, but you have to delete stuff that's more than 3 months old. It kind of gives me that nice blend of, okay, cool, this is personalized for me, but you also don't have my entire life story, even if you do have 3 months of it, roughly, if not more.
Yeah. Actually, on that note, speaking of cutting things off, we're going to have to cut off our Google rant there because we're definitely over the podcast, our normally allocated podcast time. So, with that being said, thank you for listening to another episode of ours. You can check us out on Twitter. We have a subreddit that's not really currently being maintained right now, and a few other social medias like Facebook. And so, please check us out there. Be sure to give us a like or whatever on whatever streaming service you're using, and we hope to see you next week. Thanks again for listening.